the counterfeiter then. Thus your mouth gapes to set you wrong, and never otherwise. I thirst, yes, and foul humour cruelly shapes my belly so that it attains this size. But you have burning fever, your head aches, and you would need small urging to lick dry the mirror of Narcissus. All it takes is just to say it's made of water. I was all absorbed in listening. But then my master said, "You keep this up much more, and I will lose my patience with you." When I heard him speak, it shook me to the core. He was so angry, and with so much shame I turned towards him that it haunts me still in memory. My thoughts were just the same as in one of those dreams when something ill is being done to you, and in the dream you wish it were a dream, so that you long for that which is as if it weren't, and seem to see yourself afraid, and you are not wrong. Just so, I felt I'd lost the power to speak from wanting to excuse myself, and yet excused myself until my voice grew weak, repeating all I hoped he would forget. "Much greater faults than yours are washed away by much less shame," my master said. "Unload your heart of all grief. I am here today and always at your side on the long road to tell you, if by chance you're led astray by people in a quarrel, that the wish to listen while they fight is devilish." Canto 31. The self-same tongue that first had stung me so, it dyed my cheeks with shame by what it said, had offered me the medicine. As we know, Achilles' spear that was his father's wed those same two properties. It first brought woe, and then brought solace. Thus we turned away from that sad valley, and went up the bank, enclosing it, with no word left to say. Here it was less than night. Sight wasn't blank ahead, though it was also less than day, so I could not see far. But I could hear a horn's blast, so loud that it would have made a thunderclap sound faint. It rang so clear that straight from me to it the path was laid for my gaze to rebound. Not when Charlemagne, lost to the Saracens in one sad rout, his sacred army did Roland in pain raise up his horn in such an awful shout, his ivory horn lamenting for the slain that his king heard 3 miles away. Not long was my head turned that way before I thought to see tall towers in a looming throng. "Master," I said, therefore, "tell me what sort of city stands out there." And he to me, "Because you gaze through shadows far too deep, your fancy strays, and when you're there you'll see how distance tricks the senses. Therefore keep your steps ahead, more speed." And kindly he said as he took my hand, "Before we go much further, so the fact may seem less strange, those things ahead aren't towers. You should know they're giants, and around the pit they range, sunk from the navel down in its rock rim. As when the mist thins, and sight bit by bit gives shape again to what has been made dim by air the cloud loads, so I conquered it, that thick and foggy atmosphere, and neared the brink. But as I did so, error fled, and was replaced by everything I feared, the hints and outlines of a sight to dread. For just as on the circle of its walls Monte Regione has towers for a crown, so on this pit's embankment it befalls that giants tower, although from halfway down they are unseen. But what is seen bulks large and horrible, as when they first attacked Olympus, and Jove had to stem their charge, and still shouts thundering vengeance for that act. Now I began to pick one out. The face, the shoulders and the chest, and a good part of the belly, and by both sides held in place the arms. Yes, nature, when she quit the art of making creatures of this kind, did right to keep from Mars the warriors he would have wished for. Though she still smiles on the might of elephants and whales, we think that good if we look carefully. She's just and wise, For only when ill will and massive strength are joined with mental power does it arise that the invincible is born. The length and bulk of the great man-high bronze pine cone in Rome before St. Peter's, thus his head. And he was huge, not in his head alone. His bones were in proportion. As I said, the bank, his apron, hid him from the waist on down, but up above he was on show to such an altitude you could have placed 3 Frieslanders, whose startling height we know, one on the next, and they would vainly hope to reach his hair. From that notch where a man buckles his cloak you could have hung a rope straight down for 7 strides. The mouth began to cry, "Palabra, word, cotoba, word, parole!" Such senseless sounds had no sweet psalms to fit. My master cut him off. "You stupid soul, keep to your horn. With that you may emit your rage or any passion. At your neck you'll find the strap that holds it tied. It lies across your pompous chest, you poor sad wreck." To me, he stands accused by how he cries, and so condemns himself with scrambled speech. Nimrod. The wicked tower was his design we call Babel, by which all countries each have different tongues, and even yours is mine only in part. Let's leave him there. Why talk, when every tongue to him is random sound, as his to all the others? Come, let's walk. And so we set off, turning left, and found a bowshot further on, another one, far bigger and more savage. He'd been bound by expert hands. Whose? Still, the job was done. His left arm caught in front, his right behind, by one chain wound around the haft that showed in 5 coils. This proud one was of a mind to scale the heavens by a giant's road, made from piled mountains that they went to find and challenge Jove, and this is his reward. So said my leader. He made his assault when gods feared giants. Order was restored. Ephialtes, this is, come to a halt. The arms that once moved mountains move no more. And I to him. Please may I see the vast Briareus with my own eyes. You swore in your book he had 50 heads. At last I'll see him for myself. The one for you, my master said, is near and speaks unchained. Antaeus, he will lead us down into the depths of guilt. There's little to be gained from him you want to see, who's far ahead, bound up like this one and built much the same, except his face is fiercer. So he said. Ephialtes then shook his hulking frame more violently than ever earthquake shook a tower, and more than ever I feared death. The terror of the sight was all it took, even without that chain, to take my breath. So we went on, and came to Antaeus, whose top half, from the rock up, stood the full 5 ells, or 7 strides, and all this plus the head. You that once stood where Hannibal, and all his army lost to Scipio in Libya, and turned their backs and ran that fateful valley— You that could not know all that would happen there of heaven's plan, but took for prey 1,000 lions, you, through whom, had you been with your brothers when they fought the gods, the dreams could have come true, and those sons of the earth who might have then had powers of conquest, now have this to do. Take us below, and set us down. Nor should you show disdain at this, down where the cold locks up Cocytus. It will do no good to take us on to Titius, that bold Titan Apollo burned, nor to Typhon, buried in Etna. This man here can give the thing you crave. Come, then, and take us on. Forget that curling lip. By him you live. He can restore your waning fame up there. He is alive, and plans to stay that way for a long time, unless grace calls him where it wants him sooner. This I heard him say. The giant then reached out the hands in haste, whose mighty grip was felt by Hercules, and took my guide. Feeling himself embraced, Virgil looked down and said, "Come closer, please. It's your turn." and he held me round the waist to make one bundle of us both. Just as Bologna's tower, the Garisenda, seen from underneath, persuades you that it has an even greater angle to its lean when clouds go over in the contrary direction to the way it hangs, so seemed Antaeus when I watched him bend. For me, it was a moment when I might have deemed a different road the better bet. But he set us down lightly there, where Lucifer, I knew, must be with Judas in the deep, engulfed. Somewhere down here was where they were. Our bending giant had a gate to keep. He couldn't stay like that, but like a mast, he straightened up, and we were there at last. Canto 32. Had I the bitter, grating rhymes to fit this grim hole on which all other rocks bear down, I'd do a better job of it when pressing out my thought's sap. But what blocks the flow is just that, my soft, childish tongue. It is with fear that I begin to speak, because a language we employ when young, we call our mother mummy, is too weak to use even in sport when touching on the lowest level of the universe. But may the muses who helped Amphion to build the walls of Thebes now reimburse my service to them and give me the tools to match the brute facts with the tale I tell. Ah, traitors! Beyond all the separate schools of misbegotten sinners in this well so hard to speak of, you had best have been brought here as sheep and goats. Down in the dark cistern below the giant's feet we'd seen only the wall above us, high and stark, when I heard said to me, "Watch where you tread. The wretched weary brothers locked below can't move, and you might tread on someone's head." At which I turned, and saw that it was so. Before me and beneath my feet, a lake was made by ice to look much more like glass than water. Northern rivers, though you take the Danube or the Don, could not surpass this hardness even under their cold sky of winter, when their veils grow thick to freeze their flow. A mountain would have had to fly and fall on this from any height you please. Mount Tambernick or Pietrapanna, I leave you to choose, for it to show a crack or creak at the thin edge. And as the frog that sits, with muzzle out and body slack below the water, will croak through the fog of reverie that wraps the peasant maid who gleans her flax, so livid up to where shame flushes in the face, each suffering shade lay in the ice, and all with their teeth bare and set to make the sound of the stork's bill. Each keeps his face bent down, but testifies with how his mouth looks to the killing chill, confessing his heart's misery with his eyes. I looked around the while. Then at my feet I saw two pressed together, so the hair of their heads mingled. I said, "You that meet with such strain chest to chest while lying there, who are you?" They bent back their necks, those two, and when their faces were raised up, I saw their eyes, which had held tears as sad eyes do, but all within the lids now shed far more, that spilled over the brim, and the frost tied their tears between them, and the two were locked as hard as beam, and beam lie side by side, squeezed by the clamp's jaws. Whereupon each shocked the other. Butting heads, like goats they vied, such fury ruled them. And one who had lost both ears from cold, his face still turned down, spoke, "Why do you gaze so long into the frost, and see yourself with us like frozen smoke? If you would know who these two were, the stream so sweetly named Bisentio flows through their father's valley, which it was the scheme of each to own, and that's what led them to their crime against each other. From one womb they came, and all of Caina you may search, and find no shade more suited to a tomb of crystal ice. Their fate was to besmirch their father's name, Alberto. Even he, whose breast and shadow, pierced with just one blow from Arthur, gaped so deep that men could see right through him. I mean, Mordred isn't so deserving of the place that these hold, nor Focaccia of Pistoia, who began the feud of blacks and whites, nor him before my eyes here, this infuriating man, who constantly obstructs me with his head so that I can't see past. His name was Sassol Mascheroni, who thought he merited his nephew's wealth and killed him. If the role of Florentines includes you, then his fame is known to you. But now that you spare me the task of talking further, know my name is Camichon de Pazzi. I will be exonerated by a greater shame, Carlino's, when a castle of the whites is given up by him. And after that, I saw a thousand faces from dogfights, all snarling with the cold, so looking at a frozen pond I shudder still today. And when we neared the central point, where all of gravity converges, on my way in fear along the strange floor of that hall, I shivered in the long chill. Then, by fate, or chance, I can't be sure which, as I stepped among the heads, I trod on one, full weight, square in its face. It shouted as it wept, "Why do you trample me? Unless you come because you think revenge for your defeat at Montaperti has not reached a sum sufficient, why choose my poor cheeks to beat? Because my face is cold, you think it numb?" And I, "My master, wait now for me here, before you make me hasten as you wish. But first, through this man, I have doubts to clear." My master stopped, and to the feverish blasphemer I said, "You that so revile another, who are you?" "And who are you," the answer came, "that walks the dreadful mile through Antenora, named for that man who betrayed Troy to the Greeks, and kicks my face harder than if he lived?" "I live indeed," I said. "And if in fame you seek a place, so that your name is seen by all who read, my noting it may be worth much to you." And he to me, "I crave the opposite. Get out of here, if that's all you can do, and give me no more grief. You lack the wit to flatter at this depth." And then I took him by the hair and said, "Your name, right now, or I will make your scalp an open book." And then he said, "Even if you knew how to strip me bald, my name you'll not be told, nor would I tell you even if you fell upon my helpless head a thousandfold." I had his hair already in my fist, twisted, one tuft torn out and set for more. He barked but held his head down as my wrist quivered to tear again. "But why so sore, Bocca?" cried someone else. "You're not content with jawbone music, now you have to bark? What devil drives you to this new lament?" "Well, now that I'm no longer in the dark," I said, "foul traitor, I can take in spite of you a true report." "Say what you like, just go," he said. "But back there in the light, be sure of him just now so keen to strike, you tell the tale. For down here he laments the silver the French gave him when he waved them into Italy. Speak in this sense. Just say, 'I saw him of Duero, saved to cool with all the other traitors.' Should they ask you who was here, beside you lies from Beccaria, he that plans no good against the Guelphs in Florence, and his prize was getting his throat slit, sent by the Pope, and then sent here. And then there's that two-faced Gianni the Soldanier, at last, we hope, pleased that he knows exactly how he's placed, who should have hung from both ends of a rope. And further on is Ganelon, the cause of Roland's death, traitor to Charlemagne, and Tebaldello, who flung wide the doors of slumbering Faenza so that pain could enter in." But we had left him there, already, when I saw two in one hole, fast frozen, so that one head seemed to wear the other for a hood, and the damned soul above was fastened on the one below, as hungry men chew bread, but at the spot where brain and neck's nape meet. Exactly so. Tydeus of the Seven Kings, who got his mortal wound from Menalippus, chewed the temples of his killer from sheer rage. This one assaulted as if they were food, the skull and other parts. You there, that wage a war of hatred against him you eat, and prove it with the signs of a mad beast, why do you do this? I asked. Let us meet in this agreement. If there is at least some reason for your manner of complaint against him, I, if only I knew you, and what his sin was, could remove the taint from your name in the world above. It's true, the tongue I talk with has to stay intact. So far it has. So far it hasn't cracked. Canto 33. Lifting his mouth from that most savage kind of meal, the sinner wiped it on the hair of just the head he'd wasted from behind, and thus began. You ask me to declare a desperate grief, which merely in my mind torments my heart before I talk. And yet, if what I say could be the seed that bore the fruit of infamy, for him I get my only food from, I will speak and more. I'll speak and weep together. I can't guess who you might be, and by what means you came down here. But when I hear your bold address, I sense a Florentine. So know my name, Count Ugolino. The archbishop here, Ruggeri, is my neighbor. Let me tell you why. How by his wiles he drew me near to him, and won my trust so that I fell beneath his thrall, was captured and was slain. I needn't say all that. But what you don't know yet, just how my death in pain was cruel beyond imagining, you won't be spared from hearing, and then you may see how wrong he was. A mere slit in the wall of that loft they named Hunger after me, and in which others yet beyond recall will be shut up, had shown me through its chink already several moons, when a bad dream shredded the veil of all I like to think the future held. This man was made to seem a lord and master hunting wolf and whelps on that high hill for which the Pisans can't see Lucca. With hounds lean, trained, their cruel yelps echoing eagerly he'd sent, I shan't pretend I didn't see the wolves were meant for people, his prey racing out ahead, and soon from fear and effort the legs went in father and in son, and then they bled from flanks pulled open. Slain where they fell spent, ripped up by sharp fangs. Begualandi died, along with the Sismondi. Pieces torn from the Lanfranchi were strewn far and wide. It was a shambles. Then, before the dawn, when I awoke, I heard my children cry while still asleep. But I forgot to warn you of this news, and they were there, and I could hear them beg for bread. You're cruel indeed, if you do not grieve. Now you have in view what my sad heart foresaw. And if you need worse things to make you weep, then why do you weep ever? But by now they were awake. Our meager daily ration was now due. Each boy was still afraid from the heartache felt in his dream, and then I heard below that foul keep's front door being shut with nails. At which, without a word, lest they should know from my voice how a heart feels when it fails, I looked into the faces of my sons. I didn't weep, for I had turned to stone within. They wept, and of my little ones, Anselm, the smallest, said all on his own, "Father, why do you look like that? What's wrong?" And still I shed no tears, nor all that day gave answer, and the next night was so long. And still I didn't, till the first small ray of light from the next sun had reached the world, and as that beam invaded our sad cell I saw lit clearly, where its flag unfurled, four faces, and I knew them all too well. Those faces looked like mine. I bit my hands for grief. But why they thought it must have been for hunger, any starved man understands. They rose as one. You must know what I mean when I say that all four said the same thing. Their voices added up to this. Far less pain there will be for us if you should feed on us, Father, for you gave us the dress of mortal flesh. Now it is what you need, so take it back." And not to make them more unhappy, I was silent. For 2 days we all were, and how was it you forbore to open up hard earth? Did you want praise for steadfastness? And then the 4th day dawned, and Gaddo threw himself down at my feet. "Father," he cried, "how is it that you have scorned to help me? Is there anything to eat?" He died then. And as you see me, I saw my other 3 in 2 days, dying one by one. And though I heard them breathe no more, I held them close and stroked them, while the sun came back twice. I kept calling them by name, and felt for them, for I was blind by then. And then the strength of hunger overcame even my grief. That said, he seized again, just as before, but with his eyes aslant, that wretched skull, and how his teeth were strong. You'd have to measure by the way dogs plant their fangs in bones. Ah, Pisa! Though the song of our word, yes, joins all of Italy, including you, you still shame all the rest. Your neighbors, for some reason, leave you free of punishment. Here's how it would be best. Capraia and Gorgona out to sea. Shift in and bar the Arno's mouth to drown your every soul. Count Ugolino had the name of selling out and bringing down your strongholds, and that fault, I grant, was bad. But torturing his children, that was worse, and that was you. Youth made them innocent. Besides the 2 I just named in my verse, Brigata, Uguccione also went through agony because of you. We call the new Thebes for your barbarous cruelties. And further on, another tribe were all swathed roughly in thick ice, but did not freeze face downward. They froze face up. Weeping there allows no weeping. Pain trapped in the eyes turns inward to increase itself, for where the 1st tears coalesce, they crystallize into a visor. Underneath the brow, each cup was full. And though my frozen face felt nothing, like a callous still somehow, I felt the wind, and more than just a trace. "Master," I said, "what causes this? I thought all heat down here was quenched." And he to me, "Your eyes will soon be able to report directly, for the cause you'll plainly see that drives the blast." And from his frozen crust, one of the wretches cried, "O soul so cruel, you roam free in the last pit of despair. Lift off my brittle veils and break the rule, that I might just a little give release to the sadness that swells my heart before my tears freeze up again, so they will cease where they began." And I to him, "You wish my help? Then tell me who you are. And should I fail you, may I go down like a fish to the bottom of the ice." He understood and spoke. "I am the evil garden's fruit, Fra Alberico, he who called down doom on his own brother and his son to boot. I ask for fruit there in the dining room. That was the sign. Now here in this cold tomb, it's date for fig, which means that my return on outlay is far more than I foresaw." I said, "You mean you're dead? I live and learn." "My body's life up there is a closed door to me," he said. "This zone that gathers in the treacherous to guests, and so is named for Ptolemy, exemplar of that sin, is ranked so high that some who have been shamed come sooner to their fate than Atropos determines death. That you might lift the glaze of grief from my eyes with less sense of loss, know that a soul like mine, when it betrays, loses its body to a devil who controls it henceforth till its time comes round. And then this tank is where the soul comes to, falling headlong. The body might be found above of this shade, spending winter here behind me. You must know, you just came down. Ser Brancadoria. And many a year has passed since he fell to his cold renown, locked in the ice." "You're fooling me, I fear," I said. for Brancadoria never died. He eats and drinks, wears clothes, lies down in sleep. And he, up in the ditch of the black tide, where evil claws tend sticky pitch and keep watch on the bubbles, they had not yet seen a sign of Michael's Anke, when this shade gave up its body to an imp. He'd been in league with a near kinsman. They both made with Branca's father-in-law caught in between the mischief, and that other there acquired a devil for his body so his soul could come to us. Now do what I desired. Reach out your hand, and make my poor eyes whole. Open them up. And I did not, and felt that it was courtesy to scorn the hopes of that man. Let his eyes wait till they melt. Ah, Genoese, you that know all the ropes of deep corruption, yet know not the first thing of good custom, how are you not flung out of this world? For right there, with the worst Romagna has to offer, I was faced with one of you who for his deeds is cursed, in soul, to lie there in the frozen lake, in body, through the world to walk awake. Canto 34. Vexilla regis, said my leader in his tongue. Perveneunt inferni. I thus knew the banners of the Prince of Sin were near upon us. Virgil, therefore try to look ahead. See if you can discern the evil one. As when thick fog or night comes to our hemisphere, and we see turn a windmill in the distance, such a sight I seem to see, a structure of that kind. Then for the wind, and lacking barricades against its brute force, I drew back behind my guide. I was already where the shades, it is with fear I set this down in rhymes, were wholly covered, and showed through the ice, like straws in glass, and there a thousand times in different ways they all paid the same price. Some lay down either way, some were erect, with either head or feet up. Some were bows bent face to feet. Deep down I could detect were more, and off to either side, who knows? When we'd gone far enough that my guide thought it good to show me him who once was fair, the brightest of the seraphim, who fought Michael in heaven, Virgil moved aside from just in front of me and made me halt. Behold, Diz, and the sad place, said my guide, where your resolve must be without a fault. Reader, don't ask how chill and faint I turned. I couldn't write it. All the words would fail. I didn't die, but couldn't live. I learned what living death and death in life entail. But you must ponder, if you have the wit, what I denied both life and death became. The evil emperor stood forth in his pit, from his mid-chest on up, and just the same, or worse, as my arm to a giant's arm to his compares, so think how huge his whole capacity for harm must be. His mighty strength gives you the link between his two lives. If his beauty was a match for all the foulness he has now, we see that all our sorrow came because he set his face against his maker. How miraculous it seemed what I now saw. He had three faces. The front one was red, and on each side of that he had one more, each ending at mid-shoulder. Overhead all three joined at the crown. The right-hand face was whitish-yellow, and the left-hand one recalled in looks the people of that place the Nile comes down from, stared at by the sun. Between each face two giant wings emerged, of size to suit so big a head, and sails at sea I never saw like these, quite purged of feathers, like a bat's. They beat like flails to generate the three winds by which all Cocytus is kept frozen. With six eyes he wept, and three chins let the foul tears fall, and bloody foam. Each mouth was of a size to take a sinner, torn up by the teeth, as with a harrow, and worse were the claws that strip their backs to show the bones beneath. The soul up there most punished, and for cause, is Judas, said my guide. With just his legs he signals pain. His head is not on show. We do not see or hear the way he begs, for that same mercy he did not bestow. And of the other two with heads outside that triple throat, the noble one that hangs from the black face is Brutus, once the pride of Rome. But now his words, pierced by those fangs, are lost. And there's his fellow regicide, Cassius. So they expiate their crime. But night ascends again. We ought to move, for we have seen all, and we're short of time. This journey took time even to approve. Just as he wished, I clasped him round the neck. He watched his chance of time and place, and when those wings were spread he left the icy deck and caught hold of the furry flank, and then, from tuft to tuft between the matted hair and frozen crusts, went down. When we had found the thigh's turn at the swelling haunch just there, my leader strained to bring his head around to where his legs had been, and caught the fur like someone climbing up. I thought for one bad moment we'd be back to where we were, in hell. "Hold on," he panted as if done. "From so much evil we need stairs like these to get away." And he passed through the cleft of a great rock, just squeezing by degrees, and sat me on the edge, where I was left to wait until his cautious step reached out. I raised my eyes to Satan. There he was, as he had been, but he was turned about, legs upward. If I was perplexed, I paused to let the dull decide, who do not guess the point that I had passed. The central knot of this world. There, I've said it. Saying less, my master thus, "Get up, for we have got a long, hard road to go, and yet the first hour after sunrise is exhausted." This place was a dungeon carved when crushed cliffs burst. No palace hall. It had floors you could miss your footing on if light were not the worst, and yet it swayed me to analysis. "Master, before I extricate myself from this abyss," I said as I arose, "I have perplexity still on the shelf. Clear them a little. Here's one case to close. Where is the ice? And how did he get fixed heels overhead? How is it sunlight flies without a pause, as if the two were mixed, unhindered between sunset and sunrise?" And he to me, "You think you linger yet on the far side of the center, where I took hold of the pelt of him you can't forget, that evil worm who pierces with his nook the middle of the world. But just so long as I descended, you were on that side, and when I turned, you passed where all weights throng together, drawn from all parts by the tide of heaviness, and now you are below the hemisphere opposed to that which swathes the great dry land, whose zenith, as we know, shines on Jerusalem, and therefore bathes the hill where that man who was born to live without a single sin was brought to die, for all of you. There's none he can't forgive, except us who were born too soon. But try to think of where you are now as a sphere. A little sphere you stand on, the reverse face of Judecca. When it's morning here, it's evening there, and him that we so curse, whose hair we made a ladder of, is still fixed as he was. On this side he fell down from heaven, and the land which used to fill this space, before the sea came in to drown the whole lot, chose the sea to make a veil for fear of him, and came up to our sky. Perhaps to flee from him. All here turned tail, and rushed up, leaving emptiness. That's why this hellhole parallels on such a scale a mountain you will soon see. Down there is a place set at the far end of the tomb, from where Beelzebub presides in his grim glory. A place known from the long boom, not for the sight, of that stream which descends through rock worn hollow by its winding course and gentle slope. And here the journey ends through hell, where that sad flood is a spent force, which later on as Lethe makes amends. My guide and I were on the hidden road that leads back out to where the world is bright. No need for rest. We bore an easy load. The task of getting back to the sweet light. And up we went, he first, I second, to the point where I could see an opening. And it was there I saw when I looked through, a sight more wonderful than anything. Some of the loveliness revealed to men by heaven. We could see the stars again. Book 2. Purgatory. Canto 1. More favorable waters now invite a raising of the sails on the small craft of my poetic gift, so she runs light, leaving the heavy sea retreating aft that crushed her prow, but now lies in her wake. For I will sing now of that second realm, where souls are purged and so made fit to take the path to heaven. As I hold the helm, O holy muses, here let poetry arise again from death, for I am yours. Bring forth Calliope to be with me, and join with her sweet voice that heaven adores my song, as once her lilting measures turned those mournful girls to magpies, when they dared to taunt her, as from Ovid we have learned. Poor daughters of Pieros, they despaired of pardon with their earthbound efforts spurned. They sang for Titans, but she made them cry. The sweet clear tint of sapphire in the east gathered to make serene the sweep of sky from zenith to horizon. It released the gladness in my glance again, for I had weathered the dead air that never ceased to weigh down on my heart and hurt my eyes. The comely planet that prompts us to love, veiling the school of pretty fish that lies each springtime in her train, was there above, and she made all the east laugh. To the right I turned, and on the other pole I set my mind, and saw four stars that were a sight, seen by the first men, that has never yet been seen again. The sky seemed to rejoice in these four flames. North, you're a widow, since you are denied that sight. I made the choice to take my gaze back from those merry glints, and turned a little to the other pole. The wane was gone already, and I saw beside me an old man alone, his whole aspect deserving of a reverence more profound than any owed by any son to any father. His long hair and beard were streaked with white. The hair, two streams from one, fell on his breast, and on his face appeared the light of those four holy stars to make it seem as if he faced the sun. "And who are you?" he said, giving his locks a shake, those signs of honor. "You that have come through and fled the eternal prison, even though the blind stream was against you, who's your guide? Who was the lamp that lit your path to go free from the deep night that from side to side blots out hell's valley with perpetual dark? How are the laws of the abyss defied? Has heaven decreed that those who bear the mark of doom, the damned, should come to my cliffs now?" My leader then with speech and hand and sign directed me to reverence, knees and brow, and then he said, "The idea wasn't mine to come here, but a lady came to me from heaven, and according to her prayers, I gave this living man my company, to help him through the darkness to the stairs. But since you wish to have it made more plain, how things in actual fact stand with us too, I can't deny you. This man, in such pain, had still not seen his last hour. It was due. Folly had brought him near, and almost all his time was gone. I was, as I said, sent to save him in the last part of his fall, and had no way except the way we went to get him out. I showed him first the race of guilty shades, and now propose to show the spirits to him of a different place, spirits that in your tutelage, Cato, may purge themselves. But it would take a book to tell you how I brought him through to here. Enough to say that what it really took was virtue from above, which still keeps near to help me give him you, so he may look and listen. May it please you now to bless his coming. He seeks liberty from vice, a freedom dear to him, to you no less. He knows who gives his life as sacrifice for such a prize. You know it too, for you in Utica, faced with the cruel defeat of your great cause, did what you had to do, and were not bitter, and your flesh will meet its true fate on that day of judgment when it will come back in splendor, as you shed it long ago out there with honor. Men don't break eternal laws. This man's not dead, and Minos doesn't bind me. I am of that circle where your Marcia's chaste eyes now lie, she who still prays with looks of love that you should hold her holy breast and prize her for your own, as you did up above when she came back to you. Incline, therefore, to us for her sake. Grant us right of way through all your seven kingdoms. I'll be sure to tell her of your kindness on the day that I return to Limbo, if you deem it fitting to be spoken of down there. My Marcia so put the very gleam in my eyes, when I once breathed the world's air, that I did any kindness that she sought. But now she dwells beyond the Acheron. She can no longer move me in my thought. That law was made the moment I was gone from there. But if this heavenly woman guides and moves you, as you say she does, there's no need of fair words. On high the power resides. Enough to ask me for her sake. So go, and bind him with a straight smooth rush to mark his humble advent, and his face wipe free of any dirt. The eyes may not be dark with fog for anyone called in to see the first of all the ministers who keep watch on the road to paradise. Around this little island's edge, when from the deep the waves come in and fall, there can be found the rushes that you need. In the soft mud, they grow like nothing else that puts out leaves or hardens, though the waves fall with a thud. But don't come back this way. This way deceives by looking easy, but leads back to hell. The sun's up. Take the better road it shows for going up the mountain. Now farewell. He vanished. And without a word I rose and drew close to my guide, and fixed my eyes on him. "Follow my step," he said. "Let's turn around. This plain slopes down to where it lies, bounded by water." Dawn began to burn the morning breeze away, and far away it lit the trembling sea. We moved across the lonely plain, as one who goes astray, and looking for his path still feels the loss until it's found again. Then when we came into a shaded place where drops of dew, safe from the sun, stayed more or less the same, my master laid both hands spread in full view on the wet grass. Knowing his purpose, I offered my tear-stained cheeks, and he revived all the color underneath the dry tears that I cried in hell. Then we arrived on a deserted shore that never sees a man who sails its waters and yet knows how to return. My guide, as it might please another, girded me. The plant he chose, ah, miracle! So lowly, though thus torn from where it grew, was instantly reborn. Canto 2. The horizon whose meridian, at its height, covers Jerusalem, had by now been reached by the sun, and step for step the night that circles opposite in the unseen was climbing from the Ganges with the scales that it lets fall when dark outlasts the day, as if the power of its fingers fails in winter, and it can't take what they weigh. So where I was, the white and rosy pink cheeks of the fair Aurora, as her age increased, were turning orange, made to think we tarried by the sea's edge at that stage, as those who seek the road at heart may go onward, but in their bodies pause. Look there! Just as when morning nears, we see the glow of Mars, rose red in the thick misty air above the ocean floor, and lying low to decorate the west. So there appeared to me a light that came across the sea, so fast no flight could match it as it neared. I took my eyes off it to ask my guide, "What is it?" I looked back to see it loom. Its size and brightness had both multiplied. On either side it put forth a white plume, two plumes, but were they plumes? And bit by bit below them came a third white plume, and still my master said no word concerning it, and what its three white plumes might be, until the first two unmistakably were wings. And then the pilot clear to him at last, he said, "Bend, bend your knees, for this boat brings the angel of the Lord. Clasp your hands fast. From here on you will see such ministers. See how all human tools are scorned by him. For him no oars or sails. No, nothing stirs or swells except his wings to make him skim from shore to distant shore. See how he holds them raised towards the sky. The air is swept with everlasting pinions, pleats and folds of feathers that will be forever kept pristine, and never change as even fine plumage will always do on earth." And as he came close, it was clear he was divine. For he grew brighter than men's vision has the strength to bear, and down I cast my eyes, and with his fleeting boat he touched the shore. A boat so quick and light it almost flies above the water, which gives way no more beneath it than as if it had no weight. The steersman on the poop deck stood still now, stood so his blessedness that was so great seemed written on him, and that boat from bow to stern had sitting in it as it slid ashore more than 1,000 spirits. "When Israel," they sang in Latin, this they did with one voice, "out of Egypt came." Right then, they sang it all as written. Then he made the sign above them of the Holy Cross. They flung themselves, as if they had obeyed his order, on the beach. With little loss of time, as fast as he'd arrived, in fact, he left. The crowd remaining there seemed new to this place. They were caught up in the act of testing something. As new people do, they gazed about. And on all sides the sun volleyed the day, and Capricorn was chased with keen-tipped arrows from the zenith. One and all the new arrivals rose and faced towards me, saying, "If you know the way to reach the mountain, tell us." Virgil thus, "You think we know this place? We came today, just before you. It's all as strange to us as it must be to you. The way we came was different, and so bitter, hard and rough, that now the climb before us will seem tame." The souls who had already seen enough of how I breathed to know I was alive turned pale with wonder, as if to see the bearer of an olive branch arrive, and hear his news they all had rushed headlong, uncaring who got crushed. So one and all of these most favored souls gazed at my face transfixed, as if forgetting their first call— to go and become beautiful. With grace, one came to me, and with such warmth that I met his embrace with mine, I was so moved. "Ah, shades! Your looks seem solid, but they lie." Three times I held him, and three times it proved that I in vain had clasped my hands behind his back and brought them back to meet my breast. My face displayed the wonder in my mind, I think, because the shade made manifest his pleasure in a smile, and then withdrew as I, to follow him, stepped forward. He gently suggested that I stand. I knew, then, who he was, and bade him talk to me a little while. He said, "As I loved you when I was mortal, so I love you still now I am free, and therefore I remain. But you, why do you want to climb the hill?" I said, "Casella, only to regain the place I came from do I take this road. But now you're here, how much time have you lost?" And he to me, "He stays true to his code. He takes up who he wants, there was no cost to me, and when he wants. If many times he has denied me passage, these are just decisions on his part and never crimes. A righteous will frames his will. What he must, he does. Nevertheless, for 3 months now, without fuss, he has taken all who would embark, and I, well, I had come at last down to the Tiber's mouth, and there I stood where water that was fresh turned salt, and he gathered me in. For he has set his wing, through all this year of papal jubilee, on visiting that river mouth to bring those crowded souls away who do not sink down to the Acheron. And I, if no new law forbids you now to even think about the thing you once could not forgo, if you can still remember and still do what you once did, make music for a song, and the very first to set my words was you, your songs of love lulled me when I would long for anything, so may it please you here. Refresh my soul with music for a while, for with my body it grew tired from fear and effort on the road from mile to mile, with nothing lovely to placate the ear. O love that speaks, he then began to sing, speaks in my mind, he went on. And so sweet were words and notes together like one thing, that still today the song stirs to repeat its clear lilt in my memory, lingering, always the same and never changing. I, my master, and those people there with us, seemed as content as if, while time went by, nothing remained to think of or discuss. When suddenly the old one cried, "What's this, you laggard spirits? What's this negligence? Why the delay, all this artifice? Run to the mountain, for your sloth prevents God's being clear to you. It must be stripped from you. Yes, you are here to be made clean." As doves collecting when their food is tipped, where they can get their beaks to it, are seen to pick up wheat or tares, with little sound and nothing of their usual show of pride, but they will leave their food there on the ground if something comes to scare them, for beside their new concern, their first concern turns pale. Just so I saw that troop of fledglings go towards the slope, and heard their last notes fail. They left their song, but did not seem to know where to go next, yet had no time to waste. And we went too, and went with no less haste. Canto 3. While they were scattering in their sudden flight throughout the plain, I turned my gaze to meet the mountain, where by reason at its height we are examined. Think of the defeat I would have met without my true friend near. So near I drew, for how would I have fared? Who else would take me up that hill from here? And yet he seemed somehow not to be spared from self-reproach. Ah, pure and dignified of conscience, how a tiny fault can sting! When his feet slowed down from the hasty stride that drains the dignity from anything, my mind, till then restrained, was newly keen, and with that wider range I set my face towards the hill that from the sea is seen to rise high in the search for heaven's grace. Behind me and above, the sun flamed red. Before me, the ground shone around the shape I made when sunlight stopped at me instead. I turned to one side with my mouth agape, in fear that I had been abandoned, when I saw that only I thus turned the ground to darkness, but my comfort asked me then, "Why so distrustful? Have you not yet found that I am always with you, I, your guide? Now it is evening where my body lies, with which I cast a shadow. I abide in Naples, sent there as a treasured prize from Brindisi to mark the fond esteem of great Augustus. If no shadow now is thrown before me, may its absence seem no more a marvel to your mind than how the heavens do not block each other's rays. The force that makes our bodies fit to bear torments of heat and cold has secret ways of which we cannot hope to be aware. And he's a fool who thinks our reason can trace all the paths one substance takes in three persons, for they are infinite. Mere man, the quia, the mere fact, is bound to be what you must be content with. For if you had ever been enabled to see all, then Mary would have no need to do the thing she did and give birth. You'll recall how you have often seen men's vain desire, that their desire to see things whole, a grief eternal, should have leeway to retire. Not only Plato yearned for that relief, but Aristotle too, and many more. And here he bent his brow down, and he fell to silence, looking troubled and unsure. Meanwhile, the mountain. We saw all too well the way its foot was a sheer cliff so steep the nimblest legs could not have been of use. From Lerici to Turbia, you'd keep your feet more easily where, broken loose, the rock lies wildly strewn, but still presents a staircase easier than this. Who knows which side to scale the slope on makes more sense, my master said, his step stayed, so that those who have no wings may climb. And while his face was held down and he pondered the best way, I gazed up round the rock. And in one place, there on the left, appeared a whole array of souls who moved towards us, and yet so slowly they seemed not to approach. "See there, Master," I said. "These ones might let us know the answer for which you seek everywhere within yourself, if you just lift your gaze." He did, and with an air of one set free from some weight on his mind, said, "Our best way's that way, for they come slowly. You must be, dear son, firm in your hope." Those people still were at the distance, after we had gone 1,000 paces that a slinger will attain with a good hand, when hard upon the high bank's solid wall they pressed against, they stood close packed and still, as men will pause to look when not yet from their doubt dispensed. "You that have ended well, souls that with cause may call themselves elect," declared my guide, "by that peace which I do believe awaits you all, tell me the slope that meets the stride with favor, for a waste of time frustrates the wise the most." As sheep depart the fold, by one and two and three and all the rest stand timid, and down to the ground they hold their eyes and muzzles, and the first is pressed from back there by the others if it slows, since they all do what it does, and do that simply and quietly, and not one knows quite why, if one stops, all stop. These were at that same point. Those who led the lucky flock came forward, modest, dignified. But when they saw that on my right I made a block for light, so that my dark shape walked again between me and the cliff, they stopped in shock. And back a pace they drew. So all who came behind, not knowing why they should have done what everyone in front did the same. "Before you ask, let me tell everyone, this is a human body that you see,"